Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader. Welcome to the Sonic Screwcast. We're the Lorehounds, your guides to all of time and space. I'm John, the Streak Sympathizer. Hey, I didn't write that line.
If you had written it, you would have said, and Kate did nothing wrong.
That's true. The Kate did do nothing wrong.
And I'm Alicia, sorting through my doctor-related PTSD. Welcome to our coverage of the BBC and Disney Plus series, Doctor Who.
Well, Ian's not going to be here today, but you've got me and Alicia, and we're going to have a great time talking about an infuriating episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Be sure to check out our past coverage if you've not been here before. We've done a ton of Who stuff. We did everything basically that's happened in New Who so far, plus the 60th anniversary specials.
Yes, and there's a separate dedicated Sonic Screwcast feed if you only want Doctor Who stuff. But today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 4, Lucky Day, and of course, do you have the River Song warning?
Oh, I don't have it on me.
Oh, spoilers.
Oh, no. We'll have Alicia's song here. So, spoilers today. You want to give the episode plot synopsis?
Sure. This is the official plot synopsis. Ruby Sunday faces life back on Earth without the Doctor, but when a dangerous new threat emerges, can Ruby and UNIT save her new boyfriend, Conrad, from the terrifying Shriek? What did you think of this one overall?
Okay, so I gotta just be honest, RTD got me. Like, he totally got me. I was going down the road of, like, this idiot didn't take the antidote, and he's gonna just be causing everybody to die around him, and she's gonna have to leave him and be disappointed at the end.
Yeah.
And the Doctor will swoop in, or UNIT will swoop in and save them, but a bunch of people will die, and then this guy's gonna be the shithead. And honestly, when he turns and he orchestrated the whole thing, I was like, oh, it's an interesting episode now. I was totally ready to be like, trope, 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 lazy, lazy, lazy. And then RTD got me. And I'm so pleased with that. Now, the second part of the episode where we're like playing by you know, where all cards on the table. I thought that it was very on the nose, but I'm okay with that because we don't have a lot of media talking about this phenomenon. That is very much a part of our real world right now. This manosphere type of podcaster that is just like trying to make sure that everybody knows what it means to, you know, what the truth is. The truth is underneath these denialists, these people who are conspiracy minded and everything has to be some kind of wild conspiracy. And then when they're confronted with the truth, they still won't accept it. Even when it hurts them. And to make that literal and sort of physical rather than, you know, economically hurting them or socially hurting them, I think that is a brilliant way to put it all, again, like cards on the table.
Yeah. He should have lost that arm, though.
Maybe. Yeah. Kate did nothing wrong. We said it in the intro. I messaged you that last night. Kate did nothing wrong. I stand by it. You know, it's funny. People are circulating old Who clips on TikTok. And I saw one of the fourth Doctor just snapping a guy's neck. And I was like, and people are like, Four would have laughed at 10 and 11 being so like, I don't want to kill.
I got to watch some Tom Baker.
Yeah. And literally, I literally just watched a bunch of The Curse of Peladon, which is a third Doctor story where he's doing a trial by combat.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I liked that. So I was actually, I was really into the first half, unlike you. I liked that it felt like it was two horror episodes in a row. Obviously, that gets turned on its head for a bit. But then, yeah, I was absolutely infuriated for the second half, which obviously was the point. I said, is this RTG's season of exploring toxic masculinity? You know, pairing this, especially with the first episode of the season. But I think you bring up a really important point about what toxic masculinity is. It's not just hurtful to women or to people outside their manosphere or whatever, but it is actually toxic to the people who employ it. But they're right. Just, yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about that more, obviously, because that's important to the episode. I'm not always like that into the unit storylines. I'm just like, yeah, okay. It's no Torchwood, but I loved Shirley this episode. Like I've liked her in the past, but this episode, her comedic timing was so on point the entire time. Like Kate at one point says, I checked my notes from that interview with you 8 years ago when she interviewed Conrad. And do you know what I wrote? And Shirley's like, I'd throw in a compliment.
That was a great line. I loved that one. I loved when, they said, hot taser lady. And she's like, which one of us do you think she was talking about?
She was great this episode. More Shirley.
Yeah. And I remember, I actually thought of you when I saw her, because I remember you were in the finale of last season. She was like, you were like, where was Shirley this whole season? Because she shows up in the 60th and she doesn't really come back.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess, you know, obviously actor availability is a whole thing, but now they've introduced this huge revolving cast of unit people. And then it seems like some just come and go. So yeah. I'm glad to see.
Mel's over there.
Yeah. At least they mentioned Mel, you know?
Yeah.
But then, was the guy from, the guy who's playing the kid from the last, from, I forget what the, anyway.
I don't remember.
But they just get them all in one room together sometime. I learned a fun fact this week, by the way, not really related to this episode, but I learned that Chandra, as in Belinda's last name, means moon in Sanskrit. So I just wonder if that will play a role at any point.
That's interesting. And now we do know, you know, we asked in episode one, who told the doctor Belinda Chandra's name?
Mm-hmm.
And now we know.
Oh, yeah.
Close the loop.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. I'm still wondering why the doctor was following Ruby in the Goblin Christmas special.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. We've not tied up all the loose ends of this doctor for sure.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Tied with rope.
he speaks the language of rope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So many silly things in RTD 2. We're really like stretching the science of Doctor Who a little bit.
Yeah, I don't. So, okay, I'm gonna do a tinfoil hat corner at the end again. But I was watching some classic Who this week, and it was so much sillier than what we have now.
Oh, there's a ton of silly stuff. There's a really great actually arc that I watched recently called The Daemons, and that is I think at the end of season 8, and that's the master literally using the occult to summon demons.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor is just like, the occult is just science, but you don't realize it is. So yeah, we'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. And at one point they like tie the doctor in paper.
Yeah. At least they didn't have to fight a plastic chair.
That's true. Okay. Well, I think we've done our hot takes.
Yeah.
The synopsis. Do you want to alternate?
Sure. You go first.
The Doctor and Belinda are still trying to get back to the day Belinda was kidnapped from Earth. This time they get to the Earth part right, but they're a couple of decades too early. It's New Year's Eve 2007. They're informed by a young boy named Conrad Clark, who spent the rest of his life obsessed with that blue box they were in. Cut to 2025, and Conrad has found someone who's actually been inside Ruby Sunday.
A year before meeting Ruby Sunday, Conrad saw the Doctor and Ruby hunting a Shriek, and he is tainted by the Shriek's pheromones, marking him as future prey. But when Ruby offers him the antidote a year later, when the Shriek returns, he lies to her about taking it. He takes her away to a weekend in the countryside with friends and reveals to have been faking their entire relationship after staging an attack of the Shriek that draws Unit in to investigate. Conrad is actually part of a group that believes Unit is lying and stealing tax dollars and wants to expose them.
With the help of Jordan, one of his fans who has wormed his way into a job at Unit, Conrad breaks into the building, injuring Jordan with a gun when the analyst says the violence is going too far and live streaming the whole thing. Kate Lethbridge-Stewart says that she will show Conrad's followers what they're protecting him from. She releases the Shriek, knowing that Conrad is marked as his prey, and the Shriek bites off his arm, but he gets better. Still, the damage to Unit's reputation is irrevocable in the public eye, and they lose their security clearance.
The Doctor shows up at the end for a final confrontation with the now jailed Conrad, but it's clear there are no winners here.
Can I say, just on the end part, the I've been lurking on the Doctor Who subreddit. You know, I can't say anything because I now, you know. But I saw yesterday somebody said, this Doctor hasn't had his I'm the Doctor moment. Like, he's not had the moment where he goes up to somebody and is like, I'm the fucking Doctor, you know?
Has he not? I thought we were talking about that last week.
You think he did last week?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, anyway, yeah. I think that this confrontation with Conrad was pretty close.
Yeah.
He was like, you don't get to decide these things. You're just a weak man. Like, I actually thought he showed this darker, more aggressive side of the Doctor really well in this scene.
Question, though. From that opening scene, when the Doctor gives Conrad a coin, what is that coin about? What was it? Like, at first I was like, is it a quarter? No, it's not a quarter. Do you think something
pence.
It's 50 pence?
Yeah.
So it's just a random coin. I shouldn't overthink it. Is that what you're telling me?
I mean, the Doctor picks it up, says, look, 50 pence. No, you should have this.
Oh, okay. I think I'm... Okay, fair.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think it's just a lucky coin. But it became his, like, totem of, like, this was a real experience I had.
Right.
Which is insane because he had proof that that actually happened. But because... I don't know. Like, I guess his mom, like, never believed him. I don't know. There's mommy issues there. He's got to go to therapy.
Yeah. Well, yeah. to say the least. So that first, that mission that he spied on Ruby and the Doctor doing, first of all, the warehouse of mannequins, I was like, is this going to be, what is it, Autotons?
Oh,
but it wasn't.
I'm honestly glad it wasn't. Again, not a fan. Not a fan of Rubber Mickey.
Okay.
I don't want it again. I don't want Rubber Ruby or whatever it's going to be.
But the Shriek, it looked to me very much like the Ghostbusters terror dogs. Are you a Ghostbusters fan?
Yeah, I like a good Ghostbuster. Yeah, that's a pretty good call.
Yeah, so I was calling them terror dogs in the notes until I knew that they were called the Shriek. So Ruby drops some lore. She says the Shriek live in a pocket dimension and once a year leave the hive to hunt. Yeah, that convenient pocket dimension thing coming back. And yeah, their hunting style, they hunt at night. Lights start flickering at first because they affect electricity with their background radiation. And they let you catch on a glimpse because they feed off fear. So... this feeding off fear thing actually goes in along with my tinfoil hat corner. We'll talk about later.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. The Shriek, I mean, cool villain. I did actually appreciate the use of them. This idea of like, okay, he is locked up, but Kate's going to be like, I like it because Kate didn't pull a gun on him. She said, you think I don't protect you from anything?
Right.
All right. I'll stand back.
I'll go ahead and not protect you, like you say I do. Yeah. Yeah.
And look, this was written far before, written and shot and edited far before our current political climate. And I don't want to talk directly about our political climate, but I do think that there is a level of people assuming that the government does nothing and that like we could just slash things and nothing will happen. And then when those things disappear, you're like, oh, why isn't this thing happening?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's far before. I think it's been going on for a very long time. It's just gotten worse recently.
Yeah, well, but I mean, like, it's on the nose now.
Mm-hmm. It's very
like honest, it just happens to be really on the nose for this current moment.
Hmm. I don't know. I don't know that it's accidental that it's on the nose. I feel like Russell T. Davies is like, I have things to say, and I'm going to use this show to say them.
No, I think you're right. I think great writers, and I think RTD is a great writer. Great writers put their finger on the pulse and they go, what direction is this going?
Right.
In a year, is this still going to be relevant? And and he was right. He was very right.
I also think, I wonder, it's good that we have both, you know, two genders here talking about this, because I think I had a different experience with Conrad than you did when as soon as I met him, I was like, oh no, this guy's going to be trouble. And I was immediately anticipating that he was using her and going to turn, because it was just very, I've definitely dated that guy before where you just like, he's saying all the right things and you're like, this is not real. And this is going to blow up and he's going to be faking the whole thing. Cause he seemed all like nervous and excited and clumsy and cute and like, nope, 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 going too well. But then they almost got me for a second in buying into the relationship when they went to that weekend away. They went to that village and there's that moment where like they decide they're a boyfriend and girlfriend and
yeah, very
they
kiss cute.
And the cinematography, they like blur out everything around them. So it's really just about them. But yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So I thought at first, so I was like, okay, he's going to turn and be awful and just be using her and something about Unit, because he kept asking about Unit and saying he tried to interview and they ignore him and stuff. And then he said the thing about like, oh, I didn't take the antidote that you gave me because I can be strong like the doctor. And I'm like, oh God, okay. He, at least he's not the kind of awful I thought he was, but he still is awful and she needs to run. And then it turns out he was the kind of awful I thought he was in the first place.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That's really interesting though, because I was like, I think the fact that he was like a kid, got the coin and then grew up and it did seem genuine to me. Like that got me, that part got me. But you're in the corner going, don't trust him.
Yeah. I mean, he was, even as a kid, he seemed like a kind of a little shit, but then we saw immediately whatever's going on with his mom obviously affected him in some way, because his mom called him a liar immediately. And then later in their dinner date years later, he says his mom died of liver cancer, which I don't know. I guess I bought it at the time. We find out that that's not true. And then I was so nervous when she had that, she left that dinner and she was like, I told you things I haven't told anyone. I'm like, oh no. Oh no. What did you tell him?
Yeah. Yeah. Told him everything about the shriek probably and a bunch of unit nonsense, doctor nonsense and all things he considers lies. Can I ask you, do you think he actually thinks that they're lies, or do you think that he knows that that he's lying?
I mean, that's a big question. I think Kate is right in that deep down, on the one hand, I don't think he believes it. Also, because he's, why is he still carrying around that coin so many years later? And obviously, you know, when it comes down to it and the shriek is released, he's like, help me, help me. But then at the same time, why did he not take the antidote? Like, you would think nobody would have seen him take the antidote. And then he could have, quote unquote, proven that it's not real, because it wouldn't have targeted him in that case. But
I mean, it could be, I think humans are just very complicated, right? Like, he could deep down know that it's not real. And also, like, maybe he did buy into his own lies, but then, you know, it's like no atheist in foxholes kind of thing. Like, you are face to face with this monster.
Yeah.
Are you still going to deny it? Like, even if you believed beforehand that it wasn't real.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I just also wonder about the people who are the people at home, you know, who are watching his live streams when he breaks in at the end and stuff. And they see him, first of all, struggle with the other analyst guy with the gun and, you know, ultimately shoot him. And then And also, even just the fact, like, when he comes, when he, you know, tells Ruby what's up, he says, I've had to listen to your stories for weeks now, but put up with your insecurity and vanity, listen to your tedious piano solos, and get smothered in lip gloss. It has been a chore getting to know you. And I'm like, who watches someone speak to them, someone else that way, and says, like, oh, that's my guy?
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to talk about real world politics, but there are plenty of people in this manosphere who villainize someone, especially women, who will villainize a woman and then say vile things about them. And they're like, yeah, all the audience goes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that that's a realistic thing. That's not out of the realm of possibility.
And the news is on his side when UNIT arrests them after, you know, staging this big, elaborate, dangerous prank. The newscaster calls it fascism against an innocent podcaster. And it's like, oh, yeah. But then it's, I mean, you can have some sympathy for people not knowing who to trust when there's reporting like that. But it's just amazing to me that more people don't have empathy, that when they see someone being horrible, they think, oh, maybe they're just a horrible person. And it's not about, you know, this poor woman he's yelling at and saying that he gaslighted and this entire time.
Well, you don't need to convince the whole country, right? You just need to convince enough people that are going to harass UNIT.
Right. Well, so we find out, first of all, about the mom. We find out she's not dead, and he's bought her a villa in South France, paid for by Conrad. So I do wonder, what sort of imprint has his mom left on him? He obviously kind of worships her, and she wasn't giving him the time of day in the flashback.
Mm-hmm.
But then we find out he has 80,000 paid subscribers and 3 properties and doesn't pay taxes. when do you think we'll have 80,000 paid subscribers?
I don't know. Should we start being like really hateful?
That's the thing, is like, why is it that if you are really hateful, that does seem to draw a big audience?
Because as Palpatine knows, letting the hate flow through you does feel good in the moment.
Mm.
Right? Yeah. Like it can feel good to be like fired up. And like, it felt really good to hate Conrad in this episode. I'll say that. Like, I'm watching him, and when Kate lets out the shriek, I'm like, get him.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a fun, quote unquote, Easter egg is that when they found that the analyst was the one who, you know, was the inside man for this, Jordan Lang, one of the things they said he had all these subscriptions to all these right-wing conspiracy sites, and one of them is Albion TV. And Albion, we last heard of it last season, was the political party of that Welsh politician, Roger Ap Gwilym.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. That Ruby stopped from becoming prime minister.
Yeah. Yeah, I do wonder about that analyst, Jordan Lang. Like, first of all, he works at UNIT. Doesn't he already know this stuff is real? But he's the one who had a bit of a redemption arc. I guess we probably won't see him again. It was just for this episode. They're certainly not going to give him that job back.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is, all right. I have a couple background check questions here.
Okay.
Fine. UNIT's not looking into like the personal spending of its employees. Like, I guess that would be pretty invasive.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as Cherry Sunday,
yeah,
Cherry Sunday is trying to cyberstalk Conrad. He goes by his real name on the podcast.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't come up with like the first Google search is like Conrad. What's his last name? I don't remember. Tank. Like, Clark. Maybe she doesn't know what that means, or maybe she's bad at the internet, but like it seems like that would be the first Google search.
Yeah.
Well, They did say Instagram. So maybe she's only on Instagram.
But didn't UNIT look into him before Ruby was on his podcast and started talking about stuff? You know, I don't know. There's a lot of questions like that. And like, how did Ruby think that this other podcast was a real thing? Like, how many years has he been putting on this persona? What kind of long game was he playing? Or is it just since the prior year?
Yeah, I look, RTD is playing a little fast and loose, but that's Doctor Who. Like, you just got to go with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I did like, though, that we got to see, it was nice seeing Ruby's family again, and now she's got, like, her whole mother huddle going on. She's got Carla, her adopted mother who raised her, Louise, her birth mother, and Cherry, her, you know, Carla's mother, her grandmother. So that was really nice. And they all just wanted, it just reminded me of my family. Like, they would be the same way, and they'd be like, oh, it's just so nice to see you happy. And I'm sitting at home watching this being like, run away, Ruby, run away.
Yeah, I love the Sundays. They're a lovely little family. And it was nice to see Cherry at the table and not in bed.
Yeah, that's true.
I didn't realize she was mobile.
Yeah, I guess she doesn't leave the apartment, but I guess she can leave bed. So that's good. Yeah. So that's important. Yeah. Also, speaking of connections, Kate is apparently, she was making some eyes with the hunky guard, Colonel Christopher Ibrahim. We saw this guy last season, but this season she's like, I like working late. And then they're like, eye fucking each other.
Oh my God.
I stan it. I'm into this pairing. And also, yeah, that whole thing, I didn't mean to bother you, as after Mel, and she said Mel's on her way to Sydney. There's something strange happening in the harbor. I'm like, ooh, is this a setup for that spinoff series, The War Between the Land and the Sea?
Oh, good catch. Good catch. I've been curious why they named it that for the longest time. Like, why not just name it Unit?
Yeah. I mean, I do wonder if this season somehow is going to set that up or tie into it or something, or if they're just like messing with us with that long ass title.
Yeah, it could be. It's like Agatha All Along, where they're going to give us five titles before they go in.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. That was a good stunt, though.
That was a good stunt. That was really good.
Yeah, I did like when Ruby, I cheered when Ruby clapped back at that guy at the bar before it was revealed that Conrad was a crappy dude. But the other random guy in the bar, Ruby's like, tell everyone to stay inside and call everyone and tell them to stay inside. And this random guy's like, sorry, love, who put you in charge? And she's like, or go and get some fresh air, big man, see what happens. Like, that energy was definitely foreshadowing Kate's move at the end of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. That is the same energy of just like, all right, you think you can handle it, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then we find out that, I mean, I guess the explanation is that Conrad felt slighted because Kate interviewed him for a job and said no, so he decided to dedicate years of his life to taking Unit down.
I mean, the guy's making, like, if he has 80,000 paid subscribers, let's say it's £5 per subscription.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole lot of money. I don't know why you would need to go this extra mile and end up in prison.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it just, the hate is controlling him. He doxes all the Unit employees. And so Ruby's getting harassed outside her home. Hashtag Unit lies. And then also it has real effects, because now the reason why the shriek was there to be released is that they are moving the containment cube to Geneva because security status has been downgraded and the cabinet's going to do a full inventory of the Unit premises. So I guess we're going to see fallout from this going forward with Unit.
Yeah, I don't know how much. I think the inventory is going to still happen, but I think they might get their security clearance back if things cool down, because it does seem like they cooled down the heat. The security status got downgraded because they constantly had protesters outside, like banging on the doors, like violent protesters.
I don't know. I wonder if they're going to use this as a way to make Unit be undercover again.
Yeah, maybe. Unit was, I'm in the third Doctor's era on Classic Who. I've been pretty into it. I've been watching a decent amount. And, you know, when Kate goes and defends her dad, Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart, I'm like, yeah, get him.
Yeah.
Don't mess with my Brigadier.
I mean, but even Shirley and Ruby are like, Kate, stop. Like, I called her Darth Kate in my head after that. Darth Kate Rises.
The Emperor's in here going, do it.
Do it. And then Comrade to Ruby at the end, I was really glad. He says, thank you. And she says, go to hell. She's like, I'll help you, but I don't, that doesn't mean I forgive you.
Yeah. And that felt very Doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the Doctor has been like that a million times. Like, all right, now leave. I always think of the time, remember when he was stuck on that parallel world with the thief? It was one of the specials. 10th Doctor stuck on a parallel world with a thief. She had black hair. And, you know, she's like his companion for the whole thing. They get back and she gets arrested. And he's like, I can't trust you to be my companion full time.
Oh, I need to go back and watch that.
It's a good one. He's like, I'm, you know, do your time and then be better. And then maybe we'll meet again one day.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if we'll see more of Conrad. He was so infuriating. Like, at least your special effects are improving after his life is saved. And then the monster wakes up and bites his arm. I love that. But next time we see him, he's got like this metal band around his arm, like he's being healed. I'm like, you know, he should have some real consequences for that, but he doesn't. And I guess that's kind of real in a way.
Yeah. I mean, look, if there's a way to fix his arm, I don't think we should like withhold healthcare either. I think anybody who needs healthcare.
No, I don't mean from the government. I mean from the storytelling perspective. But
Yeah.
Colonel Christopher Ibrahim, though, he's already worried about his, I'm calling it girlfriend. He says, last night went too far. Geneva will, and then Kate cuts him off. But I think we're going to see fallout.
Yeah. Kate really likes working late.
Yeah. Sorry to quote Andor, turn out the lights.
Oh my God.
We have an hour. Yeah, I do feel we're also getting like an insight into Ruby's mind in this episode where she says she's been stuck in limbo waiting for the Doctor or the end of the world. And she needs some time away somewhere new to ponder. And Kate says to call her whenever she's ready. So I guess that's Ruby's going to be off screen for a while. I think that's what they're telling us there.
Yeah, I wonder if the Doctor is going to like pick her up at some point.
Yeah.
Who knows? Because I feel like I would like to see her and Belinda together at a certain point. Maybe it'll be like Martha where she disappears for a season and then is just like shows up.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think we're done with her by any means. Because we also set up the Doctor was barely in this episode. And then when we see him at the end and he kind of pulls Conrad into his TARDIS to talk to him, it's a clear, obviously, as you said, he's the one who says, have you met Belinda Chandra yet? Who? So I'm guessing this must be for the Doctor between when he left Ruby and when he met Belinda.
Yeah. And I do like that we close the loop on that, that we know who, because we thought it was like, was this like an enemy, like a villain, like a big villain, or no, this was like a tiny villain.
Yeah.
I like that. I did, by the way, just send you a screenshot of the episode that I was talking about. It was called Planet of the Dead.
Okay.
And it was the lady Christina D'Souza, I think it was, that was the thief that was with him.
Okay. Oh, for some reason that one is not stuck in my head.
They're on a desert planet. They got a bus that they got to get home. It's a whole thing. All right. Don't worry about it. Listeners, maybe you'll remember it.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll add it to my watch list.
It was a pretty good episode. It was solid.
Yeah.
I just rewatched everything right before the 60th, so I think it's a little fresher for me.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, I haven't watched that once probably since around the time it aired, so it's been a while.
Let's take a quick break.
So the Doctor gives a big speech. Do you want to read it?
The Shriek is back in its hive. No need to thank me. You have to be invited into my TARDIS, Conrad, to be special. But you're special for all the wrong reasons. You see, I am fighting a battle on behalf of everyday people who just want to get through their day and feel safe and warm and fed. And then along comes this noise. All day long, this relentless noise. Cowards like you, weaponizing lies. Taking people's insecurity and fear and making it currency. You are exhausting. You stamp on the truth, choke our bandwidth, and shred our patience because the only strategy you have is to wear us down. But the thing is, Conrad, I have the energy to burn, and all the time in the universe.
Yeah, I definitely identified with like the exhausting and all you have is to wear us down. So that was a powerful last line for me.
I mean, my wife and I have conversations all the time of like, how do we stay informed and connected to everything, but not like fall into despair or exhaustion?
We need the doctor.
Find a doctor. Can the doctor come here, please?
Yeah.
Don't you think they look tired?
Yeah, but Conrad, he doesn't want help. He's like, what is this, an intervention? Are you here to save my soul? Like, well, yeah, maybe. I don't know. Can I? Is it possible? Are you open to that? He's like, yeah. Do you want spoilers? I'll tell you your future. You die in a prison cell, boiling in anger and poison until your heart packs it in at age 49, alone and unloved, forgotten. The world carries on. The world gets better. You aren't even a footnote, just ashes in the wind. And it does feel a bit like writer's wish fulfillment. The ashes in the wind thing makes me think of the season finale last season.
Yeah, that's a good call. And do you think he's lying here? Or do you think he's telling the truth? That's the doctor's knowledge of the future.
I mean, I guess if Conrad's already in prison, maybe that is the truth. Although the question is, can the future change?
I mean, we know it can.
Yeah, we know it can. Yeah. So can, does it matter if that's what Doctor sees in one future?
Yeah. And of course, then we have Mrs. Flood letting him out. So, I mean, look, he could go back into prison easily.
Yeah. They
got OJ on tax fraud in the end. And we know he's a tax cheat.
So let's talk about that Mrs. Flood cameo. We get one an episode, and this one is he goes back into his cell, and Mrs. Flood shows up as a prison guard, and he says, "Did I imagine that?" And she says, "No, sweetheart, it's ever so big, isn't it? Who are you?" "Oh, I'm the governor, and it's your lucky day," and she holds up the key. So, yeah, she was glad the doctor had the Vindicator last episode. This episode, she's letting an enemy out. What is her game?
I think it's to make the story go forward.
Yeah.
She's like, all right, we got to get the villain back out. Doctor's moving on. We don't need to help him this episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Okay, can I put up my corkboard with all the strings and my tinfoil hat?
Yeah, do it.
It's all connected. Well, so first of all, one thing I wanted to point out, and I have to thank the YouTube channel Who Culture for pointing this out in their Easter eggs breakdown of the last episode of The Well. She pointed out that boxes labeled with the same runic language seen in Wild Blue Yonder are seen in The Well. So I posited in my tinfoil hat corner last week that The Well was not only linked to Midnight, but it was linked to Listen and to Wild Blue Yonder. And so this is another connection, just calling that. And I said that I would watch through some other things this season to see if I saw more connections and stories that looked connected on the surface. So this is why I dove back into Classic Who. I watched seasons... two arcs from seasons 19 and 20. So the third arc from season 19, episodes 9 through 12, it's the Kinda arc. And then the second arc from season 20, episodes 5 through 8, that's the Snake Dance arc. And they're related through this entity called the Mara. And I guess you haven't gotten to the fifth Doctor yet, right, Pete Davidson?
No, I'm still like 9 seasons behind.
Right. Well, so this was my first time with the fifth Doctor, and I immediately like him. He's got real Matt Smith energy.
Okay, that's good. I've heard that he did a good job, but he had such a hard time replacing Tom Baker because he was just so beloved. And Tom Baker was the Doctor longer than anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I haven't watched any Tom Baker yet, so maybe I'll actually save Tom Baker for last, because people are like, nobody can live up to him.
Yeah, so. I do want to watch them all. Like, I love Sylvester McCoy and the Hobbit stuff, and I've heard basically it suffered from the writing during the Sylvester McCoy era. Mm-hmm. Sylvester McCoy also had some of, like, the darkest writing in Who, and that was what turned some executives at the BBC against it.
Wait, which number was he?
He was the seventh last one before cancellation.
Okay. All right. We still have to sometime do that Eighth Doctor movie.
We should, yeah. You know,
that's an easy one because it's just a movie.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But he, you know, why can't I think of Paul McGann, the Eighth Doctor, he's done like a ton of audio dramas, and now he's like some people's favorite doctor because of it.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, the audio dramas that I have listened to, I've loved. And I know there's so many more out there to dig into.
I have listened to one really good one with David Tennant and Tom Baker together.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah, it's fun. And it's fun. It's fun to watch David Tennant like pretend he's not the doctor for a minute because he's like, I shouldn't tell you.
Okay. Yeah, so one of the things that also had these audio dramas is I saw there were books, there are tie-in books too. Oh my gosh, I could go so deep, but then I'd have to spend less time going so deep into like Star Wars and stuff. But anyway, but the reason why I watched these two episode arcs is because there's this snake-like spirit entity called the Mara, and they were name-dropped last season as one of the Pantheon. And yeah, it's basically these Mara possess people, and they have a lot of things in common with these entities that like the not thing and the, what was the name of the ones last week or the, anyway, yeah, these mysterious entities, they are malevolent, they're mean spirited, and they like to toy with people. There's a few things that made me think there might be an overlap. One is in the Kinda episode, the doctor and another go into a dream world and there's a clock counting down from 11:55 to 12. The Mara are said to inhabit the dark places of the inside and they are defeated by looking into mirrors. They're surrounded by a reflection of reflections because what is the one thing evil cannot face ever? Itself. And so that reminds me about how in the last episode in the well, the doctor is like, oh, it can't look in the mirror. It's smashing all the mirrors. And, you know, and then he makes that Mercury fall to try to fight it.
Seems like Gorgon rules too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, a bit. But then I have to say in Snake Dance, the second one, they say the mirrors don't work because the mirrors have to be in a circle. So I'm like, Snake Dance kind of undoes some of the interesting things that connect with Mara. Snake Dance is set 500 years later on another planet and they're coming back. But then we do see Tegan is the companion who gets possessed both times and she starts messing with people for fun. Yeah, there's these great mind eyes crystals. But anyway, they say fear is the only poison because the Mara feed on fear to grow. To destroy the Mara, you must find the still point. And yeah, it just, I think this fear is the only poison thing is going to come back. But in the original arc, there's some Wheel of Time tie-ins. Not really. but they say, wheel turns, civilization arise. Civilizations arise. Wheel turns, civilizations fall. And I suppose this happens many times. Of course, it is the Mara who now turn the wheel. The Mara who dance to the music of our despair. Our suffering is the Mara's delight. Our madness, the Mara's meat and drink, which reminds me of the Aelfin from...
Yeah, I before I read your note, I actually thought that as you were reading.
Yeah.
So that's funny.
And then the curse of time, it is the Mara that restarts the clock. So anyway, that's a fun aside. And the other fun aside is people complaining about the look of the sonic screwdriver right now need to go back and look at this like sonic screwdriver then, which looks like basically like a cash register with string tied around it.
Y'all, we had sonic sunglasses in the 12th Doctor's era. Everybody chill out.
Yeah. but okay, so tying back into the Mara thing from last episode in the well, the doctor says, and now I'm talking to that thing behind Alice Fenley, you stone cold murderer. If the thing behind you always gets destroyed, what if the thing behind you is you? And Belinda responds, it'll see itself. So this ties back into the whole mirror thing that we saw in this. And so what I think, I found a name for it, within Doctor Who lore of what I think these interconnected entities are. And it's a psychovore. A type of creature that feeds on life or psychic energy, also referred to as mind eaters and psychic vampires. To quote the Doctor Who wiki on this, psychovores evolved on worlds with improbable ecologies where life drained life in a chain of vampirism until only a single creature was left, where natural selection turned back on itself to produce a creature that fed on life itself. The victims of psychovores were left as transparent husks that disintegrated when touched, which again reminds me of the dust in the wind from the last season finale.
Yeah. Huh. You've got a great tinfoil hat here. And I do think RTD is willing to bring back Classic Who. We know he is because he did Sutek last season. I would be very interested if he brought back the Mara. This sounds like a great
I mean, villain. He name dropped them last season. So this is why I went down this rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So this, all right, taking off my tinfoil hat for now, but I will continue watching other episodes.
Don't put it too far.
Yeah, I listed a bunch of episodes that I had an eye on in the last episode, and I've added a couple more since to the list, so I'm going to just start watching a couple more and see if I see more overlaps, and then have RTD disappoint me. But no, I really think there's something there.
All right, I'm looking forward to you donning the hat again next episode.
Okay.
I'm enjoying these segments quite a lot, so please keep doing them.
It's great for me too, because I'm going, you're just telling me about an episode I'll add to the list, but I forget a lot of the older stuff, and this stuff I obviously had never watched before. So
yeah, there's a lot of like crazy monsters, and man, when people complain about the design of the monsters in New Who or New Who, yeah. I you know, look up the Curse of Peladon, the Alpha Centauri. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first of all, it's just a person speaking in a falsetto. That's like their whole thing. And then the way they look, oh my God, I'm going to copy and paste. Please, everyone, it's the first image in Google searches. I'm going to copy and paste an image for Alicia now in our chat. Don't ever complain about the looks in Doctor Who. It's not. This is not a show that
it looks like a bug with penis arms. A okay. One-eyed bug.
Let's wrap this standing episode upright. Up.
We have an Jordan feedback for you.
Yeah, Jordan, will you save us? Should I do the French?
Yes, Québécois. Of course.
Salut, mes amis.
Salut.
Just finished watching the third episode in time to listen to your coverage, Motivating Factor. Though basing in nature, I really love this episode, and I feel like we are truly back to some of my fave Who. Though most episodes of Who can be uplifting, providing a hopeful outlook of humanity, the Tennant episode of Midnight was one of those brilliantly written episodes that, quite frankly, leaves you feeling shitty and depressed at the end of it. I think both Davis and Moffat had a knack of exploring those two extremes of hopeful humanity versus self-destruction humanity. And so I was happy for the callback in this episode and its new portrayal of those themes via the Captain and Cassio. It gives Who a depth beyond just the timey-wimey shenanigans. I really hope the viewing numbers go up, as frankly, Shuri Gatwa is cooking. Don't think I ever remember a doctorship slipping so naturally into the role. Also, Davis's response to people complaining about it being too woke by basically saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, fuck you all, it's 2025, what does that even mean, you Neanderthals? Was brilliant. Okay, on to some cardio and your podcast. Merci, Normand. I don't know. Coverage of this show, especially with so much fantastic TV going on. P.S. John, your Andor promo is just flat out brilliant, man. Sinceramente. Bravo.
I agree.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Nobody's commenting on our cutesy Andor intros, and I am offended. Cheers and merci, Alicia and Jean. I almost said Jean because I'm in French mode. P.S. Post-podcast listen, please don't bring Rose back like ever. Similar to Jean, I did rewatch prior to the 60th, and I went from a Rose fan to a Rose hater. It's insane how selfish, self-centered, and just flat out rude Rose is. She is truly an awful person. That said, bring back Clara. I had the opposite reaction and new appreciation on my rewatch regarding Clara.
Justice for Clara.
Yeah, look, I agree that Rose has been overused and I would rather a different companion coming back. I wouldn't mind if Rose came back for a brief stint, like a guest on one episode.
Right. No, a guest on one episode, I think, would be all it could be. And the only reason why I would want her back is just because she is tied to some key storytelling moments. But I don't think it's necessary by any means. But Clara, that is needed. The people are demanding it.
Yeah.
There's at least three people, you, me, and Jordan.
There are dozens of us. Yeah, you know, I you know, rewatching Rose, I think I said this at the time too. Like, I too was like, because the first time I watched it, I was 19, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was 19 and I was Rose's age. And this like impulsive person seemed very familiar to me.
Mm.
And watching it when I was nearing 30, I was like, oh, that's not great behavior.
Mm.
And so I was a little jarred. I think justice for Clara, justice for Bill. Bill's still out there. Bill
yeah.
can come and have superpowers and come on in. I want Amy and Rory to stay gone because they had a perfect ending.
Yeah. They were one of the best overall long-term arcs, but yeah.
Yeah. Like I would love to see them again, but I
But I don't it has think to be can. From Well, they could do it from like the middle of their arc. Like he goes back to the planet while they're alive, but before they met him or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
before their end of their story.
I don't even know. They explain that so wishy-washy of like, he can't land in this year of New York. Could he take a plane to New York after landing in London? Like,
well, this is what people keep. And I guess they make a tongue-in-cheek reference on the episode where can't he just land a few days on Earth a few days before this happens and go back in time? Which, by the way, it's interesting that so the Doctor version who shows up in this episode was not from the current timeline, because apparently maybe there's something keeping the current Doctor away from this Earth.
Right.
But this is before the problem started.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
Okay, so next week, if you don't want to, this is just from what we saw in the credits, skip forward once if you don't want to hear it, but it's going to be called The Story and the Engine, which is very interesting for our Mrs. Flood theories. And mm-hmm. we're going to Lagos, baby, and we got a space spider. So I know only the most basic things about African folklore, sadly. I would love to know more about it, but I'm like, Anansi, that's a spider being. And I looked it up. I'm like, well, okay, that's not Nigeria. My question is, could this be a spider entity from Nigeria or parts, you know, that part of Africa or certain groups there called Gizo? So we'll see.
Yeah.
But I'm excited for the Lagos space spider and the story in the engine.
I think that'll be fun. I think that's going to be a fun episode. And I love going to non-England locations with the Doctor. Like, it's nice to see mm-hmm. more diversity. One of my favorite episodes of the 13th Doctor era was when we did India and Pakistan.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I completely agree. I still think about that one all the time.
Yeah.
I'm like, thank God for Doctor Who and Ms. Marvel for educating me better about that conflict.
Yeah, I mean, look, the 13th Doctor's era had a million writing issues, but that was one mm-hmm. of the best episodes it had. Like, I honestly think that stands out as like one of the better episodes of Who overall.
I completely agree with that.
Yeah,
because yeah, there's also great characters in that one, too.
Yeah. For sure. Well, if anybody else wants to send us feedback, TARDIS@thelorehounds.com. Join our Discord in the link tree in the show notes. You want to talk about what we're doing on the network, Alicia?
Yes. Well, you and David are doing weekly coverage of The Last of Us, and we are all doing coverage of every episode of Andor. Actually, I heard from Aya Sedai on Blue Sky yesterday. Was like, thank you so much for doing weekly episodes, because a lot of people, they can't binge the way that these episodes are dropping. So
yeah, I do think it was a mistake to by Disney to do it that way.
Mm.
I think they should have just stretched it out like the way they did last season, especially because mm-hmm. like you can then have subscriptions for longer, Disney. Like, it doesn't even make sense on a business standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, it might be that they wanted all the episodes out before the Emmys you know, the eligibility window closes, but then they could have planned it earlier. And I don't know. I think that they did decide they wanted to do this on purpose. I don't understand. Anyway, I don't know. This is not done for podcasters. Obviously Tony Gilroy is like, sorry, podcasters.
yeah. That was funny.
And what else do we have coming up or out on the timeline?
We're getting some push to cover Murderbot. Are you in for that? Because I feel like I'm getting pushed towards it.
Yes. I mean, I saw you asked. I heard you ask in your episode of Andor, and I saw you asked on Blue Sky, and people are like, yes, cover Murderbot. But I've already read a short story. I'm going to watch the first two episodes so I can do that without reading. But then, I don't know. probably I will want to read the book, or I can be the book free person. We'll see. We'll see.
I'm like halfway through the first book. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're short.
That's why,
I'm reading the Stormlight Archive at the same time. So I'm like interspersing it, but like I'm really into the Stormlight Archive right now. So I'm like, do I have to take a break and read Murderbot? It is really good. It's just that I'm really into a different world right now.
No, that's fair.
Anyway, I'll at least finish the first book before we do the season.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite short. So that's, But so I think I might read them as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure it'll be a lot different because the books, you know, there's always adaptation differences.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I feel like it's more of a vibe than like plot twists too. Maybe I'm just not that far into it. All right. If you want to support us directly, go to Supercast or Patreon, and that's in the link tree. You can get ad-free access to our podcast and bonus content like Second Breakfast and 11zs. We're doing A Real Pain this month.
Mm-hmm. That's left over from April. But
this is our April one.
It's been busy.
It has been busy. So we'll have two this month to make up for it. And there's bonus Andor and Wheel of Time content too.
Yeah, and House of the Dragon and Rings Power and all that stuff. And do check out the link tree in the show notes for links to all of our affiliates. We've got Nevermind the Music, which I didn't realize. So they did a couple TLC episodes and I learned things about Left Eye and what happened with her. I was not aware of all these details, but I didn't realize that we are around the anniversary of her death.
Oh.
I saw someone thank them for releasing those episodes right now. I saw Radioactive Ramblings just released a new Fallout lore episode. And of course, check out Rings and Rituals, Properly Howard Movie Reviews, Wool Shift Dust, and the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast. And then I think you have some more thank yous.
Our long list of companions.
Yeah.
Discord server boosters, Aaron K, Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Dew71, Athena A, Tina Lestew, Nancy M, Ghost of Perdition, and Radioactive Richard. And our lore masters, Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, Brian P, SC, Peter OH, Adam S, Nancy M, Doof71, Brian8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Matthew M, Sarah M, Andra B, Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership61, Gnarls, Kathy W, Listu, Jeffrey B, Elisa U, Neil F, Ben B, Scott F, Stephen N, Julia F, Kali S, Ilmariel, /Tim, and Adrian. Thank you all for all your support, whether on Discord or as our top tier subscribers on Supercast or Patreon. We'll see you next week for more TARDIS adventures.
See you next week in Lagos.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Never mind the music, wherever you get your podcasts.